The so-called dark money group American Tradition Partnership gets hit with two legal setbacks. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. And Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also have Senator John Tester's reaction to the Senate deal reached today to reopen the government. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with British historian Andrew Roberts about how the rest of the world views America's political paralysis. Montana's Commissioner of Political Practices is ruling the conservative dark money group American Tradition Partnership illegally coordinated election activities with a former state legislator. Commissioner Jonathan Modell says ATP distributed campaign mailers in coordination with former Billings Republican Representative Dan Kennedy. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says it's the second blow to ATP this week after a federal judge threw out a lawsuit from ATP Associates.
The ruling from the Commissioner of Political Practices goes back to 2010, a primary race between two Republican candidates in Billings, Dan Kennedy and Deborah Bonagofsky.
I had walked mostly the whole district at one time in the primary and knocking on doors and talking to people.
That was her campaign strategy. Documents from the Political Practices Office state Kennedy decided to focus most of his campaign efforts on advertising and direct mail. Many of the ads attacking Bonagofsky. She lost by about 250 votes. She looked into Kennedy's campaign records and found he had used a company called Direct Mail and Communications for some of his advertising. That's a Colorado-based for-profit printing company associated with nonprofit American Tradition Partnership, or ATP.
How do you get a hold of Direct Mail and Communications? They have no phone number. They aren't in the phone book. They aren't in the yellow pages.
She filed a complaint, and now, years later, Political Practices Commissioner Jonathan Modell has issued his decision that there was illegal coordination between Dan Kennedy and ATP. Here's Commissioner Modell.
The candidate reported a portion of the documents, but did not report any of the production costs, not the writing of the document, the handling.
He says those costs have been determined election expenses, and since they were not listed, it was then determined Direct Mail and Communications gave those services to Kennedy.
And because a corporate entity was involved, that's an illegal election expense since a corporation can't contribute to a candidate in Montana.
Evidence of coordination between Kennedy and ATP was also found in boxes of documents delivered to the Political Practices Office from Colorado. ATP consultant Christian LaFleur claims the documents were stolen out of his wife's car in Denver. The LaFleurs also operated the company Direct Mail and Communications. They sued the Commissioner of Political Practices office for having the documents and giving them to the press. They have since been seized in a federal grand jury investigation, but District Judge Donald Malloy threw out that lawsuit from the LaFleurs this week, saying the commissioner complied with the law. The LaFleurs' lawyer, Quentin Rhodes, says they have appealed the decision to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Back to the Commissioner of Political Practices decisions, Commissioner Modell issued five decisions from Deborah Bonagofsky's complaint against Dan Kennedy and four corporations, ATP, Assembly Action Fund, Montana Citizens for Right to Work, and the National Gun Owners Alliance. Modell says the investigation from Bonagofsky's complaint is now expanding to include all candidates who similarly worked with ATP in 2010. Modell's decision also criticizes campaign treasurer Corey Stapleton of Billings for failing to keep required records. Stapleton is now running for the U.S. House seat. He says in an email that he only agreed to be the treasurer if Kennedy delegated the administrative tasks to a deputy. Modell cautions candidates running for a statewide election in 2014.
You should be very careful how you affiliate and associate with corporations, be they for-profit or not-for-profit.
Kennedy nor his lawyer returned calls seeking comment today, but Kennedy has previously denied any wrongdoing. Modell says Kennedy has the option of working out a deal with the commissioner's office to pay the financial penalty for the infractions, or Kennedy can take the issue to court. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
And in other news from around the state, Senator John Tester says today's last-minute Senate agreement to avert the threatened Treasury default and reopen the government after a partial 16-day shutdown isn't perfect, but came at a critical moment. The proposal calls for the Treasury to have authority to continue borrowing through February 7th, and the government would reopen through January 15th.
It gives us a little breathing room to be able to talk and negotiate and discuss as far as keeping the government open when we have this debate again in the middle of January, and how we're going to deal with the debt limit without holding everybody hostage. And we can have that discussion between now and, like I said, I think it's the 7th of February. So this may not be the best deal from my perspective, but I think it's a good deal because it gets us by this point in time, gets the government back up and running again, which I think is critically important, and allows us not to default and put the full faith and credit of this country at risk.
Tester says he, like so many Montanans, is sick of, as he puts it, quote, politics trumping policy.
We've got to start working together. We quit working as Democrats and Republicans. Start working together as Americans. And I feel the same way as the people in Montana do back here. You know, we've got, what, a 5% rating in Congress right now? That's probably too high. I've got good friends on both sides of the aisle who have the same frustration that I do. And so it really is time for the majority, and I'm talking about majority of people in each house, to start making policies that work for this country and take the minority and push them out of the picture. Because quite frankly, this hard right minority that's trying to dictate policy is not good policy for the country.
The developments came one day before the deadline Treasury Secretary Jack Lew had set for Congress to raise the current $16.7 trillion debt limit. Without action by lawmakers, he said the Treasury could not be certain it had the ability to pay bills as they come due.
Montana Attorney General Tim Fox says some farmers and ranchers are being denied their, quote, lifeblood, end quote, by upstream water users in Wyoming, taking more than their share from the Yellowstone River Basin. But as a trial in the interstate dispute began today, an attorney for Wyoming accused Montana of wasting enough water to more than satisfy its needs. Wyoming Senior Assistant Attorney General James Costi said in opening arguments that Montana needlessly allows water to bypass the Tongue River Reservoir instead of capturing it for future use. Fox says the issue is a red herring, meant to divert attention from Montana's claim that Wyoming violated a 1950 water sharing agreement. The U.S. Supreme Court appointed Stanford Law School professor Barton Thompson Jr. to oversee the trial. It's scheduled to last for weeks.
Prominent Montana conservationist and former state public service commissioner Bob Anderson has died in a rollover accident in Tanzania, Africa. The fatal crash happened last Friday in Serengeti National Park. It also injured Anderson's wife, Grace. The couple was in Africa to climb Kilimanjaro. Anderson served as president of the Montana Wilderness Association and as executive director of the Greater Yellowstone Coalition. He also served on the Montana Public Service Commission from 1991 to 2002. Anderson's wife, Linda Stoll, says he is a great man who helped earn designation for both the Great Bear and Absaroke Beartooth Wilderness. He also successfully fought to prevent a dam being built on the Yellowstone River. Stoll says he provided the people that citizen activism still works.
It gives hope to people who are engaged in some of the environmental battles of the day, and people were inspired by that activism.
Stoll says Anderson's wife Grace has been flown to a hospital in the U.S. Anderson was a Livingston native who lived in Helena for many years, but more recently lived in Myers, California.
A former Missoula woman is charged with parenting interference after prosecutors say she kept her daughter from the girl's dying father for more than a year. Viola Renee Prasma appeared in Missoula County Justice Court yesterday after being extradited from Hettinger, North Dakota, where she was arrested last month. Acting Justice of the Peace Mike Frelick set bail at $10,000 and said she could not have contact with her now 5-year-old daughter if she was released. Court records say in late March 2012, Stanley Prasma told his ex-wife that he had been diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease and had between 2 and 5 years to live. Soon after, Prasma said his ex-wife told him she was taking their daughter to Billings for 2 weeks, but court records say she moved away.
A Great Falls area woman is charged with smuggling marijuana to her boyfriend 3 times while visiting him at the Cascade County Regional Prison in recent weeks. The Cascade County Sheriff's Office says Jamie Lynn Reel is charged with 3 counts of criminal distribution of drugs, possession of dangerous drugs and paraphernalia, and 3 counts of transferring illegal articles. Sheriff's Commander Dan O'Fallon says Reel is charged with bringing marijuana to Randall Lowell Stone, a state prison inmate being housed at the regional prison in Great Falls. Stone was sentenced to prison in 2007 for theft and drug convictions and a 2000 sexual assault conviction, all in Gallatin County. Stone is charged with 2 counts of criminal distribution of dangerous drugs, 1 count of attempted distribution of dangerous drugs, and 3 counts of transferring illegal articles.
The estate of a reclusive railroad retiree who lived in a small motorhome without running water has donated $1 million to a northwestern Montana church where his mother taught Sunday school and Bible study classes. The Daily Interlake reports executor Doug Johnson announced Roger Wold's bequest on Sunday at Christ Lutheran Church in Whitefish. He said it was made in honor of Wold's mother, Dee Wold. Wold was 75 when he died in February 2012. Johnson says Wold lived frugally so he could buy real estate and that he owned lots along Whitefish Lake, including an 80-acre parcel where he parked his motorhome. The Reverend John Bent asked the congregation to pray for the next 40 days to consider how the money might best be spent.
Two Butte Silver Bow County employees have been reprimanded after a motion-activated camera was installed in a little-used room in the health department in the hopes of capturing paranormal activity. Butte Silver Bow County Chief Executive Matt Vincent tells the Montana Standard that an internal investigation found that no crimes had been committed. A memo about the investigation from Interim Human Resources Director Penny McElroy says the health department employee thought it would be fun to have a Butte paranormal investigative team see if there was any paranormal activity in the building. Members of the paranormal group say they forgot it when they left. An employee who noticed the camera on August 21st was worried that someone was spying on employees and turned the camera over to police.
Renowned British historian Andrew Roberts is harshly critical of his country's increasingly isolationist foreign policy and says America is becoming a laughingstock internationally because of its political paralysis. Roberts was in Missoula this week to lecture at the University of Montana. He's written several critically acclaimed books about World War II and is a frequent political commentator in print and on television. In tonight's feature interview, Roberts talks with news director Sally Mock about foreign policy and why he thinks Great Britain should have supported the U.S. threat to attack Syria over its use of chemical weapons.
I like to see Britain as being intimate ally of the United States. I see it very much as I'm a believer in the special relationship. And I thought that when the House of Commons voted not to support what was President Obama's stance at that time, prior to the Russian involvement and Mr. Kerry's remarks, I thought that that was a stepping back from our traditional role of supporting America.
Do you support what has happened since with the Russian involvement and President Obama's support of that?
I think that President Putin has stolen a march on President Obama, I'm afraid. I think that the way in which he leapt on Mr. Kerry's comments, which I'm not sure were scripted in any possible way, I think Mr. Kerry just said them almost off the top of his head. And the mistake has been then to follow it up with a series of agreements that strike me as next to impossible to fulfill, owing to the fact that clearly Assad is going to have moved his chemical weapons all over the country. So it's going to be next to impossible to find them, although one is heartened by the idea that at least they're going to try.
The world's response to this and Britain's response is driven by the Iraq and Afghan wars. You've written about that, and you've described British foreign policy as the emasculation of British foreign policy after the Iraq war.
Well, that's right, yes. I mean, after Iraq, we don't feel that we can do very much. And one sees that a little with regard to Syria. Libya, I think, was a positive step. I mean, Britain actually did at least do something in the struggle to try to bring down Gaddafi. But overall, yes, I think, of course, both of those adventures, both in Iraq and Afghanistan, have hobbled British foreign policy, which, as I say, should be to support the United States.
The reaction you don't find at all logical, given how those wars have turned out?
Well, I don't see the wars as being as disastrous as so many people do. I think that the overthrow of Saddam Hussein was a very good thing. I think that the present
Iraq is better off?
I think Iraq, well, certainly financially much better off. Of course, the economy in Iraq is booming. But I don't think you mean that, do you? You mean, is it better off as a sort of emotional place? Well, I think that you've
Well, not just emotional. I mean, do you think the people in Iraq are better off?
Well, at least you've got representative institutions there instead of the fascist dictatorship that they had before.
Still, people are dying there in an alarming way.
I know. It's a disaster that President Obama took the troops out of Iraq, and so we have so many people dying there now as a result. But nonetheless, it's you couldn't stay there forever.
You've also described Britain as being, quote, on a path to international irrelevance.
That's right, yes, it's a great shame.
And you support the Cameron government, though.
Well, not in its policy of stripping us of a worthwhile Army, Navy and Air Force. I don't support it. And that's the thing that's leading us to irrelevance. I support it domestically, yes. I think it's on the right track as a government, but not as far as this unbelievable stripping of the defences that we've got.
So you certainly would be critical of Americans who urge isolationism in this country.
It's in your farewell address of George Washington, of course, isolationism, and neo-isolationism has been a very powerful force in American politics, not least with Lindbergh and the American Firsters and all of that kind of thing. But nowadays, in a world that is so interconnected, not just economically, but also militarily, it strikes me as an impossibility.
You've written so much about World War II, and that was a war that would be so different than any war that would be fought now.
Yeah, but if there hadn't been American isolationism in the 1920s and 1930s, we might not have had World War II. My sense very much is that a really robust response to Hitler early on, at the time of the Rhineland, the remilitarization of the Rhineland in 1936, if supported by an America which was in the League of Nations rather than one that decided not to join the League of Nations, would have rebuffed him, and he'd have been overthrown by his own generals.
What do you think of the United Nations? Do you think that's an effective organization?
No, not in the slightest. I'm not sure that it was ever going to be. If you do give five great powers veto rights, you know, it's the only things that are going to be agreed on are something that isn't going to tread on the toes of one of the five great powers. And as two of the great powers are China and Russia, I can't see it as being an effective organization in the way that I would like to see it.
You've been described that you write, quote, great man history.
Yes, I'm a believer in great man history. I do think that individuals do matter. I think that, if anything, over the last 30 years, we've seen a drawing back intellectually from the assumption that, as T.S. Eliot said, history is made by vast impersonal forces. I don't think it is. I think that it's impossible to look at history and not see the influence of individuals. And so, as a result, I think it's worthwhile writing about Churchill and Napoleon and Hitler and these other individuals who have had a major impact, you know, on it.
You've also written about why Hitler lost the war, and you have some interesting thoughts about that, in that it was, in fact, his own mistakes is why he lost.
Well, yes, but not just mistakes. The mistakes were driven by his ideology, by his fascism. Had he not been a Nazi, he might not have lost. A Moltke, say, or a Bismarck, or one of the great late 19th century Germans who weren't obsessed with ideology and racism and fascism and all those other bits of ideological baggage that Hitler brought with him, could have actually pulled off that war, which is very fortunate in a way that we all are, that you know, he was so obsessed, because he, again and again, when the best interests of the Nazi party bifurcated from those of the German Wehrmacht, the army and the armed forces, he would always go down the route of the fanatical Nazi as opposed to the best thing for the German Reich.
Who do you consider a great leader today?
Golly,
You can't say no one, of course.
I certainly can't say no one, and I wouldn't say no one. No, I think that there are some impressive ones. Nelson Mandela, of course, although he's not in power any longer. I think that Stephen Harper in Canada is a very impressive leader.
Why?
I just think that he's marvellously unaffected by assumptions made by pretty much everybody else. He doesn't seem to care. I think that Benjamin Netanyahu has the makings of a great leader too. I'll be interested to see what the next stage will be vis-a-vis his problems with the Iranian nuclear issue, but I think he's also got the makings of it.
Given that you didn't mention President Obama, what is your opinion of him?
Oh, well, on a list of leaders, no. I think he was wildly overrated. The idea that he should have got the Nobel Prize in the opening moments of his presidency seems to illustrate very well the overselling of Mr. Obama by himself, of course, in the first of the elections. He promised things that, and this is the job of any politician facing election, of course, you promise things that you don't necessarily believe that you can deliver, but there seems to me an enormous gap between one and the other. This isn't all his fault. Your constitution does have a series of checks and balances, and you're seeing it, of course, at the moment with this imbroglio over the
more
debt
checks
ceiling.
Than balance.
Well,
absolutely,
yes, yeah, or so finely balanced that absolutely nothing can be done. And with the shutdown and the debt negotiation, it strikes me that this is not what the founding fathers were thinking of.
What is this shutdown doing internationally, do you think, to America's status?
I think it's making you a bit of a laughingstock, frankly, which is something I hate. I'm a true Yankophile. I love America and I hate
it. And you live here now. You live in New York.
I live here. I live in New York and I'm in heaven. But when I go back to England and I'm going to France on Friday, and I've got lots of friends, of course, all over Europe, and I hate it when they laugh at America because of its present I think imbroglio is actually probably the best word for it. Debacle might be another one. But I mean, I don't for a moment think you're going actually to not honour your debts. So nonetheless, this constant coming to the edge of the ledge and looking over into the abyss, there must be a better system than that.
It's not that image is everything, it's that it really does probably weaken the country.
Well, if you didn't pay your debts, the whole world economy would
well,
be...
Well, even the appearance that we...
Yes,
that we,
yes, yeah. the threat that that you might not. I mean, this is you know, a very, very great nation in history, and the idea that it might not honour its obligations, even the idea that it might not honour its obligations, is something that should be unthinkable.
Well, I've been speaking with British historian Andrew Roberts. Mr. Roberts, a pleasure to have you in our studio. Thank you so much.
Honor to be here.
Before the weather tonight, a brief correction. I said Anderson's wife, Linda Stoll, had said he was a great man who helped earn the designation for both Great Bear and Absaroka Beartooth Wilderness. In fact, Linda Stoll is Anderson's former wife. And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, look for partly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and areas of fog. Expect lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow should be partly cloudy with areas of fog, a slight chance of rain, and highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. In central Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies in the evening becoming partly cloudy, and a chance of rain and snow through the night. Lows are expected to be 25 to 30 degrees. Now, tomorrow should have increasing clouds with patchy freezing fog in the morning and a slight chance of snow in the afternoon. Highs 40 to 50 degrees with gusts up to 35 miles per hour in the afternoon. Southwest Montana tonight expect mostly cloudy skies and a slight chance of rain and snow with lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies, highs 40 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Abraham Kim.
Learning a foreign language is both time-consuming and cumbersome. I still recall in high school and in college spending hours trying to memorize hundreds of vocabulary words in Spanish and Japanese, and the dozens of ways to conjugate verbs. I still cringe when thinking about the deep embarrassment of those awkward moments when I try to express complex thoughts in front of my foreign language classes using kindergarten-level terms because of my limited vocabulary. Although these were difficult times in my international academic training, I certainly do not regret it. Looking back over my 20-year professional career in public policy and international business, my foreign language training prepared and inspired me to think globally about my future, helped me make great friends around the world, and opened doors for me in my career. In short, learning foreign languages did not just give me ways to communicate with people in other countries, but it deepened my understanding and appreciation for the rich and complex world we live in. Today, with the world's borders more porous than ever, I believe foreign language training needs to be an important part of any serious student's academic curriculum. Recent scientific research on the brain suggests that learning a foreign language makes students smarter overall. Among the many benefits, it increases students' mental focus, reading and writing abilities, and even improves mathematical skills. I don't know if my geometry or calculus grades jumped up because I was studying Spanish or Japanese, but it did sharpen my critical thinking and broaden my perspective about the world. It opened my mind to new cultures and new ways of thinking. It gave me a chance to consider foreign cultures against my own values and traditions, and gave me a deeper respect for a multifaceted world. Through language learning, I was exposed to a different set of aesthetics, cuisines, philosophies, politics, histories, and traditions. All this classroom learning naturally became a catalyst for me to travel and study abroad to further enhance my international education through seeing and experiencing foreign cultures. One of the most rewarding parts of learning foreign languages is that it helped me to make connections with people overseas. It is amazing how people's perception of Americans abroad change when they speak the language of the host foreign country. For me, it immediately transformed the way people perceive me from an outsider to a friend. Even though initially my conversation skills were quite elementary, it allowed me to build trust more quickly and to establish a stronger relationship with people. In my small way, through the time and resources spent to learn foreign languages, I was showing honor to the mother countries of these languages. Most recently, I came to realize how making connections through learning foreign languages can even save lives. The Maureen and Mike Mansfield Center at the University of Montana trains young American military personnel headed to Afghanistan in the local indigenous languages and cultures. For many of these soldiers, these classes are their first exposure to the Muslim religion, Afghan culture, and the Pashtun and Dari languages. Through language and cultural education, one of the many goals is to train these young Americans to be soldier diplomats on the field. Alums come back from their tours with stories of arbitrating disagreements between Afghan leaders, persuading villagers to collaborate with U.S. forces, and building deep friendships with locals. These young trained soldiers were restoring peace in these war-torn societies and helping to rebuild a country, which could not only be facilitated through language and cultural understanding, not through guns and bombs. Finally, with people, information, and capital flowing more freely than ever, the ability to think critically across different societies, to communicate in different languages, and to form connections with a variety of people internationally is becoming more important than ever. The world is becoming more competitive, and unfortunately, Americans are falling behind. When traveling overseas to visit foreign schools and universities, I am quickly reminded of how American students are losing their edge on a number of fronts. We, of course, read about how students in the United States rank far behind many of their Asian and European counterparts in math and science. In addition to these subjects, foreign language training is perhaps another area where Americans are lagging as well. These same foreign countries are actively educating their young students in English starting from elementary school. For some Americans, this may be an excuse for why U.S. citizens do not have to learn other languages, because everyone is learning English anyway. But this is a false sense of complacency. Yes, today we live in a world where the United States is still the global leader in a number of sectors. But we may be heading into a future world where our children and our grandchildren will no longer view the United States as the only dominant force in politics, economics, business, science, and technology. In this probable future environment, our multilingual foreign competitors will have the advantage over monolingual Americans. In short, if we are serious about educating global leaders for tomorrow, we need to have students who can engage many different societies and be able to build cooperation between them. Foreign language must be an important part of this endeavor. The pursuit of foreign language education should not be considered a luxury to be sought by a few, but rather foreign language instruction should be a core element to our education and taught as early as possible.
Abraham Kim is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.